This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Still assessing the fallout from Super Tuesday. Former Vice President Joe Biden won all the southern states up for grabs, including North Carolina. Biden now leads Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in overall delegate count, but the race for the Democratic presidential nomination is far from over. How might the man at the top of the ticket affect other races in North Carolina, like the Senate or gubernatorial elections? The political junkie Ken Rudin's here to look at Super Tuesday's results and how the Democratic presidential race is shaping up. Plus, how is Donald Trump handling the coronavirus outbreak in the U.S.? Ken Rudin, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
What do you think? North Carolina fell in line and rather quickly. The results were in pretty quick after Super Tuesday for Joe Biden.
And not only that, a day or two before, there were polls showing that Bernie Sanders had either tied Joe Biden or was moving ahead in North Carolina. It seems, it's one of the most dramatic things I've ever seen in watching presidential politics, the fact that Joe Biden left for dead after Nevada, after three poor showings. Then he gets big endorsements from black officials in South Carolina, led by Jim Clyburn, a landslide win in South Carolina, and then all the other candidates drop out, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and they endorse him, and then boom, Super Tuesday comes, and he wins states, one he was expected to do, but wins by bigger than expected, and then he wins states he was not supposed to win, like Massachusetts, like Texas, like Minnesota. So it was startling, and North Carolina played a big role in all of it.
Well, the precarity in all of it leading up to the primary was the hand-wringing that went on over what to do, particularly on the progressive end of the spectrum. Progressives saying, looks like the cards have been played. We're worried from the progressive point of view. You know, do you vote your conscience for somebody who's not looking so strong and perhaps the moderate gets the ballot? And then all of the calculus that goes on, who can beat Trump? And it seems that in the end, it's the calculation that the moderate has the best chance may have played a part in the minds of voters. What do you think, Ken, and what about that calculation? How accurate is that, given the fact that polls show that both the Sanders and Warren all had a good chance against Donald Trump? I don't know what to make of it.
Well, first of all, I'm not convinced that the voters felt that Sanders and or Warren had a good shot against Donald Trump. And as far as who could beat Donald Trump, there were a lot of Democrats, a lot of people in that so-called moderate lane, even though calling Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, and Joe Biden moderates. I mean, they're liberals, but they're not, you know, the more the progressive wing of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. But the fact is, there was Michael Bloomberg. There was a lot of splits among the Democratic field. And so the question is, I don't even know if this was an affirmation of Joe Biden as it was two things. One, that Bernie Sanders may not be able to win, and he was considered the front runner after Nevada, and Democratic establishment, whatever that means anymore, was nervous. And the fact is that, as you say, the calculation may not be, I love Joe Biden as much as I want Donald Trump defeated in November, and the polls indicated that Biden, with a strong support of black voters, may have had the best shot. You know, since 1992, every candidate who won the black vote in the primaries has gone on to win the nomination, and that was another good thing on Joe Biden's side.
Now, yesterday, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren drops out of the race, but she has yet to endorse a candidate. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, something to be honest with you, I kind of was disappointed in the focus on whether who she'd endorse. I mean, her body's not even cold, you know, his body's still cold, and already they're saying, who's she back? I think it's more interesting to take apart the fact that once upon a time we had a field of 24 candidates, six women, and now we have two elderly white guys who are going to lead the Democratic charge against President Trump. I think Warren brought a lot to the race. She was considered the front runner at one point. But it came to a time, and I think we saw this during the debate, when she confronted Bernie Sanders and said that there's this feeling in the Democratic Party, or at least in the electorate, that a woman can't beat Donald Trump. And whether that's true or not, I think it led to her downfall, in addition to the fact that she was being hammered on both sides about her plan for Medicare for all.
All right, let's look ahead to the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee in July. I guess still a chance the nomination could be contested. When was the last time that happened?
Well, the last time it went beyond one ballot, was 1952 in Chicago when Adlai Stevenson walked into the convention as a non-candidate, walked out as a nominee. And, of course, if it goes past one ballot, then the superdelegates have a say. But given the fact that it's down to two candidates, I can't imagine one candidate not having a majority of the delegates come even before you get to Milwaukee. And the way the calendar is looking right now, you'd have to think that Joe Biden is the front runner. But remember, there are debates coming up. We've been wrong with prognoses before. We've said that Joe Biden is left for dead. So it's too soon to write off Bernie Sanders, but I can't imagine one or the other not having a majority going into the convention.
All right, let's talk about the impact of these races. And let's stick with Joe Biden. Say he goes on to win the nomination. He's at the top of the ticket in November. In a state like North Carolina, how does that affect the down ballot? And let's talk particularly, or at first anyway, about this U.S. Senate race with Cal Cunningham and Tom Tillis.
Well, I mean, Pete Buttigieg made this case during the debate, and I kind of agreed with it, that there was a sense that Bernie Sanders, yes, he would bring his very fervent supporters, and nobody has more enthusiastic supporters than Bernie Sanders, but he would be weaker in these centrist swing states like North Carolina. Look, let's face it, North Carolina went for Mitt Romney in 2016, went for Trump in 2020. Would that be as receptive for a Bernie Sanders candidate? I don't think so. Now, of course, North Carolina can split their vote. They do split their votes. 4 years ago, not only was Trump elected, but Roy Cooper was elected governor. But I think if you want to beat Tom Tillis, and that is one of the Democratic priorities for November, for the Senate, if they're going to recapture the Senate, then I think that Joe Biden, with his support among black voters, with his support among more moderate voters, I think he would be a stronger candidate for the bottom of the ticket in North Carolina.
Well, and the tension in the party is if Sanders can bring in voters who didn't show up in 2016, young voters in particular, and increased voter turnout in 2020, that would make him a strong candidate, whatever his policies may look like, how far to the left he may be of the party center. But at this point, he has failed to do that. And now you have to recalculate and recalibrate when you're looking at who can beat Trump.
That's absolutely correct. All along, we kept saying that Bernie Sanders has a better shot in November because he'll bring in expand the electorate, more voters. But as we've seen in California, in Iowa, in New Hampshire, he is not doing that. And I don't know if it's because of an expanded field. We'll see what happens with Elizabeth Warren out of the race. But right now, there's no indication that Sanders is expanding the electorate. And so that's one of the critical arguments on behalf of his candidacy.
What do you make of this Senate race right now? I think this morning, the Cook Political Report calls the race between Tillis and Cunningham a toss-up. Yesterday, PPP polling showed Cal Cunningham up 5 points. And same thing for an NBC poll. What do you think?
Well, you know something. I mean, of course, there was it was very interesting to see how the primary would go. He won pretty handily over Erica Smith. He is clearly the kind of candidate I would think could win. But then, you know, I mean, as somebody who has studied North Carolina politics as long as I have, I always think of Jim Hunt against Jesse Helms in 1984. And Jim Hunt, for the longest time, had a huge lead over Jesse Helms, but Helms found a way to win. I don't think Tom Tillis has the kind of smarts or the kind of political smarts or the kind of organization that Helms had. But I think if you have to look at the top five seats in the country that the Democrats have a shot at winning, I would definitely put North Carolina on that list.
All right. Isn't this a crazy thing? I mean, take a look at this. 4 years ago, the Republicans are worried about the electability of a candidate. If Trump wins the nomination, we can't possibly win. That's the mantra. We need to find a moderate Republican. And they go with the outlier, right? The white supremacist, absolute outlier, political outlier, not even a favorite among political conservatives because he doesn't even fit that mold. They go with him. The Democrats, kind of in the same, having the same problem in the same debate, are moving to the center. They become the party of moderation, and it's the Republicans who go off the deep end in 2016. That just, to me, is kind of a weird moment in American politics, don't you think?
Well, that's very true. I mean, everybody's talking about if they want change. I mean, if you want change, the two change candidates would have been Sanders and Trump.
Right.
And even though Trump is in the White House, he's still, you know, he's still battled the establishment, battled the status quo. And certainly Joe Biden, if anybody represents the status quo, going even backwards to the Obama years, it is Joe Biden.
All right. So politicians sometimes can control events, but you can't control nature. The coronavirus outbreak, Donald Trump's apparent mishandling of that. He is suffering in the polls. What do you make of it?
Well, something, you know, the point about having somebody in the White House whom the American people look to for leadership in times of crises. You think of Reagan during the Challenger explosion. You think of Clinton, Oklahoma City. You think of Bush during 9/11. We look to those people, and they comforted a grieving nation. Donald Trump seems to be battling his own health experts. He seems to be battling the World Health Organization. He relies on hunches. He puts Mike Pence, for goodness sakes, in charge of things. When Mike Pence was governor of Indiana, he would pray to stop the HIV crisis. So there are a lot of problems with Donald Trump leading this effort. And the fact that he's contrasting and arguing against what some health officials say, it just puts people more in a panic mode. And if you go into any store, the shelves are empty because people don't know how to respond, and they're not getting the leadership from the White House that they deserve.
Shelves are empty. Stock prices are falling. And if we go into a recession and unemployment by November, that really changes the outcome.
That's true. But, of course, you know, we've heard the president, whenever the stock market goes up, he takes the credit. When it goes down, he blames the media, the Fed, and the Democrats. So he
But the people tend to blame who's in charge. And they don't really care what the guy did the day before. If I lost my job and you're the president, bye-bye.
Yes, but we've never seen a president like Donald Trump before.
That's true.
I agree with you. I think somebody has to take responsibility. And if the market is falling and coronavirus still remains a key issue, that could be very significant for November.
Ken Rudin's the political junkie. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.